From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Dr. Sai Giridhar. Brother Giridhar, who was born into a Sai family, later joined the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School for his 11th standard and continued to do his bachelor's and master's in chemistry from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And following Swami's instruction, he did his PhD in chemistry, after which joined the Sri Sathya Sai Center for Human Values here in Prashanthi Nilayam as a resident fellow. This talk is titled The Presence Behind the Veil and was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 1st of January 2018. Stay tuned, dear listeners. After the talk, we will have some beautiful songs by overseas devotees. And at 3:30 p.m., we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Sathya Sai Divya Sandesha Chari. With that, over to Dr. Sai Giridhar.
Upadharam Shantam Sarvanamadharam Sivam Satchitananda Advaitam Satchitananda Advaitam Satyam Sivam Sundaram. Offering our most humble pranams at the divine lotus feet of Satchitananda Bhagwan, who is present here in the form of each one of you, humble and loving pranams to all of you. The topic for today is the presence beyond the veil. What presence are we speaking about and beyond which veil? Veil clearly is something that separates us from something else, isn't it? When we have a veil or a curtain, it separates. There's a curtain here, and the curtain separates what's behind the curtain from us, isn't it? So in that context, let's look at what is the veil that separates us. The first veil that we can imagine, very simple veil, is distance, isn't it? Physical distance, the space. Suppose you're in Australia, or you're in Europe, or in America, and Prashanthi Nilayam is in India. Apparently there is a physical distance. So you have to cover that. You need your passport, your visa, everything in place for you to cover that distance. And once you cover the distance, you transcend this veil of separation in terms of distance and you are in Prashanthi Nilayam. Even if you are in India, you might be from Chennai, you might be from Mumbai, you might be from Kolkata or Delhi, or any other place, and even that is a distance-wise separation from Prashanthi Nilayam. And once you traverse that distance, the veil of separation vanishes and you are in Prashanthi Nilayam. I'm going to share with you a phenomenal experience that happened in the year 2011, December, that talks about a presence beyond the veil. There was one gentleman who was part of an academic team that visited from Indonesia, and he was part of a 12-member team, and the members selected for this team from the government of Indonesia were chosen to be the best in the country, and their role was to come to India and study the education system. They have been making similar trips to the Harvard University, the Yale and Oxford and Cambridge. But then they felt that culturally we are so diverse, why don't we look at a country which is culturally closer to home? Because Indonesia has many cultural practices very, very similar to India. And India has a good education system as well. So they felt that, okay, so let's look at India as a model and study how we can integrate values with education. So they contacted the government of India and they were directed to spend about a month's time in India, of which 6 days they spent in Mumbai and 24 days they spent in Prashantinilayam. Now the thing was, when the government of India gave the directive to the university, to our university here, and said that a team is coming, this is an elite team, so you have to take care of them and, you know, show them how your system works, what are the fundamental basis on which the system runs. So you have to explain to them how value integration happens in education, for which we are sending them to you for 24 days. We got a call from the administrative block, and I was part of the 2-member team that was called from the university to have the initial discussions on how to host this elite team from Indonesia. And the moment they told us that the team is coming, our first question was, sir, what is the duration of their stay so that we can plan the activities accordingly? So, you know, the authorities told us 24 days. We were like shocked. We said, sir, we have to make a 24-day schedule for them. It's almost like a summer course that Swami would conduct in Vrindavan. And how can we do that? And what will we tell them for 24 days? So anyway, that was the task given by Swami. So it had to be done. So we went ahead and charted out a plan on how to engage them for 24 days and give them a more in-depth. What it did was, 24 days allowed us to give a more in-depth view into the extraordinary education system that Swami has, you know, hand-nurtured. He has built it with his own hands. So they arrived here and we had multiple sessions. So I'm going to fast forward to a core session. Core because of its influence on what we are discussing here, that is presence beyond the veil. So this team from Indonesia, they are visiting, all the members of the team were visiting India for the very first time. They have never been to India. They have never been to Prashantinilayam. And they don't know who Sai Baba is. So they just land from Mumbai at the Bangalore airport. And from Bengaluru, they were driving down to Prashantinilayam. And we welcomed them and, you know, we went to the administrative block on top. On top of the hill, now we have three beautiful architectures. We have the Sanatan Samskriti building, the museum, then we have the administrative block, and then now the archives building is also there. So we took them to the administrative building and we had a meeting there. This is an important piece of information just to keep in mind for later. It has a key role to play. Eventually the sessions went on as it should. And in one of the sessions, in the multimedia center at the university, that is the college campus below, we were discussing with them the daily schedule that Swami has for his students. So how they should get up morning at 5 a.m. and then they have their morning prayers, they go for jogging, exercises, yoga. And the whole schedule was being presented to them and the insight on why it is like that. Why has Swami made this schedule? At that time, one gentleman who was seated at the end, he was very unique because he would always do the opposite of the rest of the team. If the entire team would go in this direction, he would go in that direction. If all of them were, you know, they saw that we are all wearing white, so some of them started wearing white shirts at least by their own choice. They felt like, you know, gelling in or something. So they started wearing white shirts. He would wear black and black, you know. So he was like that. He was very unique in the team, I would say. But a very jovial, fun-loving, blissful person. But he would never sit in the front rows. He always would sit in the back rows. And from there he raised his hand and said, "I have a question." So he said, "Yes, sir, please tell us, what is your question?" And he said, "See, it looks like all the activities you're talking about is amazing, but it looks like all these are based on the teachings of Sai Baba. The issue is we don't know about Sai Baba enough. So can you please tell us what is the fundamental teaching of Sai Baba?" This was his question. Before we could endeavor to answer, he gets up from his chair and says, "Before you give me the answer, allow me to come to the board." There was a white board behind where we were making the presentation from. So he said, "Allow me to come to the board. Let me present our understanding of spirituality." So we said, "Most welcome, sir. Please come." So he came up to the board. Interestingly, just to understand the layout of the multimedia room, it had chairs similar to where you're seated. It also has a stage similar to the setting here. And there was Swami's chair also kept on the stage right in the center, right in the middle. And we were presenting from that end and the whiteboard was on this end. This was the layout of the multimedia room. Incidentally, that was the only day that Swami's chair would be on the stage, because usually when there is a program, we would keep Swami's chair right in front, because the one who is doing the program would like to, you know, offer the program to Swami, looking at Swami's presence. So they prefer, they would pray that Swami's presence is invoked and Swami's chair would be kept right in front of the speaker, not on the stage. But on that day, we don't know how, but the person who arranged the Swami's chair had kept the chair here, right in the middle. This gentleman came up, he started using the board, he drew a line in the middle, and he wrote Earth. And then he drew seven lines on top, he said seven skies, and he gave Arabic names to them. And he drew seven lines below and he said lower earths, and he gave Arabic names to them. And he said, "See, human being through his thought, word and deed, he creates his energy, and he's right now at the level of earth. If he does good thoughts, good words and good deeds, he would evolve to a energy level which is of higher skies. And if he engages in bad thoughts, bad words and bad deeds, he would descend to lower earths. But then this entire system of 14 worlds is not the goal for which we have come. There is a fundamental energy that is beyond this 14 world, and that is our goal, to realize that we are that." This was his description, and he said, "I am from a Sufi background," and his guru was a great Sufi saint from the 15th century, and his name was Radin Sayyid Sunan Kalija. You can Google him later. Radin Sayyid Sunan Kalija, a 15th century sage, a Sufi master in Indonesia. He was his guru and he was guiding him even now in his meditations. Right? So he said, "I am a Sufi person, I am a Sufi follower, a Sufi sadhaka. So this is my understanding. So can you please, you know, based on this, give your understanding of what Swami tells us?" So it became very easy because the context was set. Otherwise Swami's, you know, teachings are really an ocean. Where do you start? But then he presented us a concept. So it became easier for us to start from there. So I went up to the board and I just wrote Sanskrit words for the same Arabic words, and I said, this is Bhur, Bhuvasuva, Maharjana, Tapa, Satya Lokas, and then you have Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Patala, Lokas. It's the same thing, we just said the terminology is different, but we also know that there is a fundamental Shakti or energy that's beyond this, but then that alone is not the goal of our realization. The purpose of human living or human body is to realize that there is a Shiva Shakti, that is a Shiva aspect that transcends all of this. So that is our reality. So we said we are on the same page. So it was easier to move ahead from there, and we moved out of that room and we were going ahead to the next session, which was in a different building in the campus. And this professor, the Sufi professor, he comes and he calls me aside and said, Mr. Giridhar, I am overwhelmed by Sai Baba's energy. So I was very happy to hear that. This is December 2011, right? So I was very happy to hear. So I said, wonderful, sir. So what do you mean by Sai Baba's energy? How are you experiencing it? So he said, I saw him. This is what the Sufi professor from Indonesia said. December 2011, the premises is our university campus here, and he said, I saw him. So I just wanted to clarify with him. I said, Baba has, you know, there's a beautiful world. Whenever I travel to Himalayas, you know, the rich culture of Bharat is in the Himalayas and in the villages, Swami says. So when I travel to Himalayas, the sadhakas there in the Himalayas, they ask a very interesting question. In the sense, when they talk about Swami's sannidhi, samadhi, they ask in a very gentle, very beautiful way. They ask, unka deha shant ho gaya na? You know? They don't ask very rudely, they ask very sweetly with so much love, oh, the master has silenced his body, isn't it? Means the body has, only the physical body has been silenced. See, look at their level of understanding and from what level of love and understanding they speak. They say, oh, the master has silenced his body, isn't it? So I told this to the Sufi master, a Sufi professor, and said, Sai Baba has actually silenced his body this very year in the month of April. He said, yes, yes, once I reached here, I got to know. I never knew who Sai Baba is. But after coming here to Prashantinilayam, I was told that, you know, in the month of April, he has silenced his physical form. Then I said, sir, but you said you saw him. He said, yes, I saw him. So where did you see him? Then he goes on to explain and say, do you remember I went to the board and I explained the Sufi concept of what is the spiritual realization like? There was a chair kept right next to the whiteboard. Do you remember? I said, yes, sir. There was a chair there. He said he was sitting there. And he goes on to say, I'm just telling you verbatim what he said. He said, see, I am not a Hindu. But when I bowed down my head to him, I felt like bowing down my head. I just bowed down just a bit towards him in reverence. And he put his hand on my head. Like here, right? He bowed down like this. Swami's chair was here. And this is his words verbatim. He said, he put his hand on my head. The energy that I feel from his hand on my head is so overwhelming. That's what I'm saying. I'm overwhelmed by Sai Baba's energy. And he said, this is not the first time. Do you remember we had the first meeting in the castle? I said, castle? Where is the castle in Prashantinilayam? You know? So then he says, no, the building on top, that is the administrative building, you know, next to the museum. So he said, that looks like a castle, so I prefer to call it as a castle. And he said, you know, we had the first meeting in the castle. and we were all seated. This was in the Chancellor's committee room, which is oval in shape. That is, the table there is oval in shape. There are chairs for all the members, for the board members to sit and discuss. And at the one end of the arrangement is Swami's chair, the typical Swami's chair, which is long, right? Swami used to sit on those chairs with a long backrest. So that was the chair, and we were basically sitting on either side of the chair, obviously, because Swami's presence is invoked there. So the Indonesian members were on one side of the chair, and we were on the other side, and that was the initial ice-breaking session we had. And this Sufi professor tells us that the first time I saw him was in the castle. And I don't know why there was a long chair there at the edge where nobody was sitting. Actually, I saw him there. This is what he said. I saw Sai Baba there and on the long chair. Next to him was my guru, and next to him was somebody who I was sent to meet when I come to India. These are his words again. He said, on the long chair was Sai Baba. Next to him was my master, the Sufi master Sunan Kalija. And next to him was somebody whom I was sent to meet when I come to India. So this was all, you know, too much for me in the sense to digest in one shot. So I requested him to proceed to the next session, and I was very grateful that he shared his experience. What I did was, see, this is a delegation that is coming from government. So there are protocols. We need to, you know, extend our rightful courtesies and take care of the protocols as well. So keeping everything in mind, the only sensible thing I could think of was to inform the administrators that he is constantly experiencing something. So they should be in awareness of that. So I called up the administrators in the ad block, as we call it, administrative block on top of the hill, and I reported to them. I said, there is a professor, he is a Sufi follower, and these are the experiences that he is sharing. So the administrator in the university was also overwhelmed, and he said, see, there is no reason why he has to, you know, tell just like that, because they don't know anything about Swami. He's come here for the first time. But just in case, why don't you do one thing? You go to the multimedia room where the meeting happened. It was video recorded because I had asked them to video record all the sessions. So why don't you just go and check for our record? So I went happily to the multimedia room, requested the brother there to rewind the tape, the digital tape, and go to the point where, you know, he was explaining on the board. And what I saw was astonishing, because at the moment when he completes his, you know, presentation of the Sufi idea, he just for a moment bows next to Swami's chair, and there is actually nobody else in that direction other than Swami's chair. He just bows down for a moment there, and he walks off. So I then called up the administrators and said, yes sir, as he described, it is exactly that way. Of course, we didn't see Swami on the tape. So, but this is what happened. And so the instruction I received henceforth was, carefully note down everything that he's saying, because this is extraordinary. See, he's coming all the way from Indonesia. He's a Sufi follower. We are talking about veil. Veil means something that separates two things, right? We are talking about distance being the separating factor, and some may call religion means in their own naiveness or ignorance, they may say religions being separating factors. But then here we are seeing that somebody from Indonesia who never knew Sai Baba, first visit to Prashantanilayam, right? So it just gets better than this. So the very next day, this was on a Wednesday. So Thursdays, Swami has a tradition here in the university that we have something called the moral class. The moral class is when Swami would himself pick a speaker and send the speaker to the university campus, and they would share their experiences, deep insights, spiritual lessons with the students. So that was a Thursday, and our former controller of examinations, one of the most extraordinary and beautiful devotees you will meet in Prashantinilayam, Professor Nanjundaya Garu, he used to be one of the translators of Swami's discourses. Sir was giving a talk to the students on that day. So we had requested Sir, kind of bringing to his awareness that there is a team that has come from Indonesia, and they are from Islamic universities, and they have no idea about Swami's name or presence and his teachings. So please, in your talk, also speak about Swami's teachings and Swami's message, because that will be a good introduction to them, and they are very keen to know Swami's message. So the professor was speaking. It was a wonderful session. Again, the setting in the university auditorium is similar. We have the seating arrangement, and we have a raised stage, and the stage is similar to this. We have a podium and Swami's chair kept as it is seen here, right? So, and all the Indonesian members, committee members, the gents were seated there and the ladies were seated there. And in between there is this, the steps to walk up. Why I'm describing this is, again on that day uniquely, we have Swami's chair right in the center for all programs. For that day, I don't know whose instruction, Swami's chair was kept on the stage right here. We have Swami's photo here usually, but that day chair was also kept here on the stage. And the professor went on a beautiful set of experiences. He projected the letters which Swami had written to him, and it was all an amazing morning we had. And after his talk, you know, as is a tradition, aarti was offered to Bhagwan, and after the Mangal Aarti, we chanted Om Shanti and we were about to disperse, and it was my duty to take them to the next destination for the session that followed for the delegates. This professor, he walks up to me again and he says, "So, does Sai Baba always give such benedictions?" So I said, "Sir, please come again." So he said, "No, does he speak to all of you like this regularly?" I said, "Who? The professor?" "No, no, Sai Baba." "Did you see him again?" He said, "Yeah, he was there on the chair, that long chair you have kept on the stage. Swami was sitting there. He told me, Baba, Sai Baba was there on the chair." I said, "What else happened, sir?" He said, "How did you miss it? You were sitting right in the front, I saw you. And Sai Baba was on the chair. And after the wonderful talk by the professor, you all of you were clapping and singing something. And you know, you were waving fire." See, it's a new tradition for them. So this was his description. "You were waving fire. And it was at that time that he got up from his chair." Just imagine, those of us who know how bhajans used to be in the bhajan hall, it was at the time of aarti that Swami would exactly get up from his chair. You know, he would push his footstool, that would indicate aarti, and as soon as they start showing the aarti, Swami would get up from his chair. Now, how does he know? So, he is telling the exact description. He said, "When you started clapping and singing and waving the fire, Sai Baba got up from his chair and he came and stood in the front and he showed the pose," he said, "like this with Abhayahasta. And he spoke so loudly and I wonder how you missed because you were sitting right below." I said, "Sir, you're very, very fortunate that Swami, the presence beyond the veil that we see here in Prashantinilayam, is giving you the blessing of seeing him. He's right here in Prashantinilayam. He's giving you the blessing of seeing him." So, what did he tell you? And the professor said, he stood like this and said, move from every body to every soul, every soul to one soul, one soul to God. Just imagine the profundity of the message he received from Swami. Move from every body to every soul to one soul to God. In fact, after a couple of days, he did not remember this. Just to say, if there is somebody wondering, maybe it's a Sufi concept which was there deep in his subconscious. But after a couple of days, he didn't remember this because he came back and said, do you remember what I told you of what Sai Baba said that day? Because that is new to me, so can you remind me of what he said exactly? Of course, we couldn't forget what he said. So, move from every body to every soul to one soul, and one soul to God. And this is something we will discuss just a little later. But continuing with his experiences, they were then eventually sent to the Vrindavan campus in Whitefield and the Anantapur campus as well. So they went visiting, they studied the environment and how the education system is and everything. After the Anantapur campus visit, this professor comes back jubilant. He is jumping in joy and he literally, like a child, hops towards me and says, successful, you know. I said, what happened, sir? So, and he says, the reason for which I was sent here to India, successful. Wow. So what is the reason? Then he went on to explain his entire experience. When he was back in Indonesia and he was meditating, he is a karma yogi, bhakti yogi and a jnana yogi in the sense that we understand from the Indian philosophical language. He's a karma yogi, bhakti yogi, jnana yogi. Why? His entire day he spends in teaching and serving his students as a professor, right? The entire night he sits and meditates. He sleeps for 2 hours from morning 5 to 7. That he was sharing all this. Means just to tell you that it is, as Swami used to emphasize again and again, it is your sadhana that is very important. The sadhana that you do every day, which is very important for us to experience this presence beyond the veil. The personal sadhana that we do. So, he was telling his schedule. The whole night he would meditate. 2 hours he would sleep, get up, go to the college and serve his students the best possible way he could. He didn't say, I teach my students. He said, I serve my students. So he was literally a yogi from Indonesia, belonging to a Sufi background, but he was a perfect example of how a sadhaka should be, right? And Swami was as much Swami to him as he was for us. So where is that veil of distance that separates him from God? There is no veil of distance. So he said successful because in one of his meditations in Indonesia, his master, the great Sufi saint Sunan Kalija, he had instructed him, showing a presence. He showed him somebody. He didn't give a name to him. He just showed somebody and said, when you go to India, you have to meet this person. That is your duty. Means you're going for academic work and all, that is secondary. So this is your primary duty. What is it? You have to meet this person. Right? So, after that, he said, I saw the same person in the castle, standing next to Baba's chair and next to my master as well. But I couldn't interact with him or I couldn't know who he is. So now I know his name. I said, sir, can you tell me his name? Do you know his name? And, you know, the way their pronunciation is different. I'm sure if you're from England, you'll find my pronunciation weird. So Similarly, you know, from Indonesia, we find them weird. So, the way he utters the words are very, very different. So, he was telling Maulana something. So, I couldn't catch that very well. But the way I understood what he was saying was, Maulana Nasiruddin or Mulla Nasiruddin. Those of you who have read comic books or are aware of few discourses where, you know, Swami also would mention, or specifically one devotee of Swami, Popatji, used to regularly, you know, cite his example. Mulla Nasiruddin was a very funny saint. He used to do all kinds of funny things, but there was wisdom behind everything. So I was wondering, to meet Mulla Nasiruddin, he has come all the way from Indonesia to Prashantinilayam. So it was somewhere not matching. The things didn't tally for me. So anyway, that was a day that we were walking up to the castle, and we had to, the administrators had requested if he could share directly all these experiences with them. They also wanted to check if we could take his permission to record it in the Radio Sai. But of course, eventually he said, no, this is very personal to me. So we respected his choice and privacy. But he did come to the administrative block and share all the experiences directly with the administrators, during which time, when he repeated the name, one of the administrators caught the name. And I was telling him, sir, why has he come all the way to Prashantinilayam to meet Mulla Nasiruddin? He said, no, it's not Mulla Nasiruddin. He's telling something else. Then he requested him, can you please repeat the name? And he repeated, and the administrator caught it correctly. He said, what he's saying is Maulana Shirdi. The name that he was saying, who his guru, his master had shown him in Indonesia, that when you go to India, you have to meet him, was Maulana Shirdi. Why? Because the role that the master played in Indonesia was exactly the role that Shirdi Baba played in Shirdi. That is unity of religion, unity of faith. Shraddha and Shaburi. These were the same message that the master gave in 15th century in Indonesia. And he was giving the message as Shirdi Sai here, as the incarnation of Sai in Shirdi. And that is why the master guided him to say, when you go to India, I want you to meet him. And he said, I have seen him in Prashantinilayam, and I actually interacted with him, he said, in the Anantapur campus. So when they went to the Anantapur campus, as his nature, everybody went one side of the corridor to check out the classrooms. He turned and went the other side. And as he was walking on the other side, suddenly he beheld before him, just as we see each other in flesh and blood, both Satya Sai and Shirdi Sai. And he interacted with them, and he was filled with bliss. That is why he came back jubilant, and he was jumping in joy and said, successful, successful, you know. So this was an amazing sharing of experience, and we were coming down from the administrative block. And I just told him, sir, do you know that Maulana Shirdi is also called Shirdi Sai Baba? So he stopped for a moment and said, oh, he's also Sai Baba. I said, yes. In fact, Swami has revealed, you know, way back in his childhood, that Satya Sai Baba is a reincarnation of Shirdi Sai Baba. So he started laughing. I said, why are you laughing, sir? He said, you know, when I went to the campus in Anantapur and I experienced the presence of Satya Sai Baba and Shirdi Sai Baba, I also experienced that they are one and the same. I experienced that Satya Sai Baba is a reincarnation of Shirdi Sai Baba. But I was hesitant to share this experience with you all, because I was wondering, you know, if somebody comes from Indonesia and tells that the master that you behold is actually a reincarnation of Maulana Shirdi, whom I have come to see, and we have no idea of who Maulana Shirdi is. He said he felt that would be awkward. So that is why he didn't share that experience. He said, this is what I experienced, that Shirdi Sai Baba and Satya Sai Baba are one and the same. Even as we were, you know, talking about this, we were coming down the castle and, you know, along the meditation tree and walking down towards the general hospital lane, and there was Maulana Shirdi's beautiful idol there. And I, you know, the timing and the sequence was so extraordinary. And we just completed this conversation and we were in front of Shirdi Sai Baba in the general hospital compound. And I just turned there and I said, sir, Maulana Shirdi. And he said, oh, that's just a statue. I have seen him in real. This is what he said. He said, oh, that's just an image. I have seen him in real. This was his conviction of the experience he had. The veil, the presence beyond the veil. Coming back to what Bhagwan had told him, I think that's a very important teaching that Swami gave him to understand how we can experience this presence beyond the veil. Swami had told him, just to repeat, move from every body to every soul. Every soul to one soul. From one soul to God. In one interaction which I had with Bhagwan on 18th of September, and I think the year is 2005, it was a Ganesh Chaturthi day. You might have heard this particular interaction, but I feel this is the crux of everything, so I don't mind really repeating this again and again. And more importantly, in the context of trying to understand this teaching of Swami, which he gave to the professor, it's very, very critical. So, there was this clear understanding which Swami presents through his discourses and teachings and personal interactions, that there is a single veil that separates us from him. You know, there is just one veil that separates us from Swami. And that veil is ego. Swami says, God plus ego is man. Man minus ego is God. Which means ego is the veil that separates man from God. And if you remove the veil, there is actually no separation. So, the question that came there was, how to remove this ego? So that was an opportunity because it was a Ganesh Chaturthi day, and Vinayaka, as he's called, you know, we all love the Ganesha at the entrance of Prashanthi Nilayam. Vinayaka, as he's called, is also called as Vignaharta. That is one who removes all obstacles from our life. On this New Year day, you might want to go around him specifically. You don't want any obstacles in the New Year. So, Vinayaka or Vignaharta, as he is known, is a remover of obstacles. And I felt the only obstacle, the only veil that separates Swami from us is ego. So, on Ganesh Chaturthi day, the day of Vinayaka, the Vignaharta, the removal of obstacles, if we pray to him directly, Swami, remove this veil, how easy, right? So, we all had come up with a program on Navavidha Bhakti, the nine forms of devotion, and presented to Bhagwan, and Bhagwan saw the entire list of program and he said, this we will have in the evening. This program we'll have in the evening. So what it gave us was time with Swami, because we were already surrounding Swami. Swami was comfortably seated on his chair and he was not about to give a discourse or anything at that point of time. So we had ample time and we are with Swami. So I took courage at that point and just went on my knees and said, Swami. Swami said, Ego chala pedda problem, Swami. This ego is a very big problem. Just to understand, ego means, in Bhagwan's definition, identification with this body. To think that this body is me is ego. This is the fundamental ego. the pride and the arrogance and all are manifestations of this misunderstanding. They come much later. But the fundamental root cause, which is the original ego, is identification with the body, to think that this body alone is me. Right? So, said Swami, ego chala pedda problem, Swami. The ego is a very big problem. Swami's face lit up and his eyes broadened and he said, oh no, chala pedda problem. It's a very big problem, Swami said. I said, Swami, please remove this ego. So I thought I hit a jackpot on that day, being a Ganesh Chaturthi day and all that. But Swami, you know, Swami just looked at me and said, see, remind yourself constantly, I am God, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahmasmi. And Swami said, you will be God, and God has no ego. Well, I said, Swami, for that, your grace is required, Swami. Me anugraham kavali. Your grace is required for this to, you know, be in realization. Swami then gave possibly the most important instruction I have received personally from Swami, which I feel is equally important for each one of us, is Swami said, Bangaru, my loved one, na anugraham meepaina eppudu undi. My grace is always on you. Kani daniki taginettu, and then he did like this. But that grace which I have already showered on you, you have to, and he just directed like this. I said, Swami, should we channel the grace? He said, daniki dari nuve ivvali. My grace is abundantly on you, but it is your choice to give direction to that grace. What I understood eventually is, his grace is abundantly on us, otherwise we cannot sit here in Prashanthi Nilayam. Swami says, even an ant cannot enter Prashanthi Nilayam without my will and grace. So it's impossible. So his grace is already on us, abundantly on us. But to give direction to the grace is our choice. What is the choice? The choice is either to identify with the body, because he is not identifying wrongly with the body. We are. Swami is not identifying for us, or he doesn't have any misunderstanding like that. He sees everything as the same self. But we have this misunderstanding. So Swami is saying, my grace that I am abundantly showering on you, I leave the choice to you. There I will not interfere. Please note this point. I will not interfere in your choice. And what is the choice? You can direct the grace for worldly welfare alone, to solve all your family problems and all your other problems, or you can direct the grace to know that you are not this body, you are not this mind. To completely eliminate ego also this grace can be used, or to live comfortably in this world also this grace can be used. Swami said, the choice of what you do, I'm not saying if you choose the other you won't get this one. That is the other meaning, the one of realization of the self. Because as Swami beautifully defined, the moment you know that this is not you, pain untundi bangaru kani suffering ledu. Pain will still be experienced, because that is the nature of the world. Pain and pleasure constantly alternates. There's nobody, look at your own experience, look at people around you. There is nobody who experiences only pleasure in this world. Pleasure and pain always alternate, durations keep changing, right? So that is a norm of, that's the nature of this world. Just like it is the nature of fire to burn, of ice to cool, like coolness is the nature of ice. It cannot do anything about it. And fire, it's the nature to give light and heat. That is the nature. Similarly, the nature of this physical creation that we see, pleasure and pain will always alternate. The duality will always be there. All the duals. Happiness, sorrow. Success, failure. Everything is in two, in pairs. in this dual world, because this world itself in our perception is actually a duality. So Swami said, my grace is abundantly on you, but what direction you give to the grace is your choice. There I will not interfere. Right? The second thing Swami said on that day is again very important to understand the presence beyond the veil. Bhagavan said, I'll tell verbatim, as Swami told in Telugu, then I'll translate it. Vinayakuduni gudilo matram chuste akkade undipotaru. If you see Vinayaka, see, Swami's choice of words are very specific. He didn't say Ganesha, he didn't say Vignaharta or anything else. He said Vinayaka. Vinayaka means, Nayaka means the leader. Right? Vinayaka, in Sanskrit, when V is a prefix to any word, it negates the word. That is, in a sense, it says, Vinayaka means, who has no leader above him. There's no master beyond him. He is the ultimate master. Right? So Vinayaka literally means the ultimate master above whom there is no other master. Right? So Swami said, Vinayakudini gudilo matram chuste akkade undipotaru. So it is not restricted to the form of Ganesha in Prashantinilayam or any other temple. Vinayaka means the supreme master in any manifestation. So it could be Krishna, it could be Rama, it could be the sannidhi of our beloved Bhagavan. Swami is saying here, if you see him as a physical entity isolated or limited to the space of the sanctum, then he will remain there only for you. He is not going to manifest his presence beyond. Means his presence is everywhere, but you will not feel it. Why? Because you have decided that he is only there. Vinayakudini gudilo matram chuste akkade undipotaru. If you see Vinayaka just in the sanctum of a temple, he remains there. In fact, the theme of today's talk came from a very interesting experience I had in our Swami Sannidhi. This all of you can observe. As soon as Om Shanti 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 He is over after Aarti, you will see a torrent of people running and coming into line. Yes? Okay. The other thing, after the second Aarti is given to Swami, right, the curtain closes. The moment the curtain closes, everybody is up and running. This is a very normal scene you will see if you go and sit long enough in the mandir. This is what actually inspired this topic in me, because the presence is always constant beyond the veil. Whether the aarti happens or not, whether the curtain in front of the sannidhi is closed or open, Swami's sannidhi is always there, isn't it? The curtain is open, it's closed for whom? For the onlookers. Has Swami Sannidhi vanished behind the curtain? Or does it appear again when the curtain opens? No. The presence is constant and always there behind the veil. But how many of us are aware of the presence? How many of us are awakened to the presence that is behind the veil? That is why Swami always said, after bhajan, spend a few minutes in silence. Don't get up immediately. Why? My presence, both inner and outer, is eternal. Antar bahishcha tat sarvam vyapya narayana stitaha. Swami would make us chant this mantra many times as part of the Vedic chanting, which means antar bahishcha tat sarvam. Inside and outside and hence everywhere, vyapya narayana stitaha. My presence, as the one who guides you in the path of realization, Nara Ayana, that is one who gives direction to Nara, Narayana, Stitaha, I am eternally present. Means my presence is beyond the veil of time and physicality and everything. Antar bahishchatat sarvam vyapya Narayana Stitaha. Right? So even if the curtain closes, Swami has not gone in. The sannidhi is right there, isn't it? So our understanding has to be to awaken ourselves to the presence beyond the veil, both physical, that is inside and outside. So Swami said, Vinayakudini gudilo matram chusti. If you see Vinayaka only in the temple, he remains there. Then he said, Vinayakudini atma rupam lo chusti, ekkada poina akkade unnaru. Which means, if you awaken to the presence of Vinayaka, that is the master beyond whom there is none, you know that presence to be the atmic presence, not limited to any space or time, then wherever your body moves, his presence is verily there. Adi Shankaracharya, in a beautiful composition called Shiva Manasa Puja, you know, he explains the experience of this, right? And he says, Atma Tvam Girija Matihi. O master of masters, that is Vinayaka, right? One who has no master here. Atma Tvam, he's referring to Swami, because this prayer is Shiva Manasa Puja. Atma Tvam, the Atma itself is you. Girija Matihi, the energy that emanates from you has become the mind. So I experience your presence constantly as the Atmic Self. Girija Matihi, and the Shakti is the mind. Sahachara Prana, the breath that flows in the body continuously, that keeps the senses alive, that all the senses and the breath, Prana, are the Shiva Ganas, the servants of Shiva. Vishayopabhoga Prasadaha. Whatever the senses partake through the body, see, this is a practical way to practice this. Vishayopabhoga Prasadaha. That is, whatever I partake through my eyes, through my ears, through my interaction, through all the senses, is actually an offering to the Lord. That is, it's a prasad. That is, once you give it as an offering, as naivedyam, you receive it as prasad. Right? As the blessing, benediction of the Lord. Vishayopabhoga prasadaha. Sancharapadayo pradakshina vidihi. See what he has said many centuries back. Sancharapadayo pradakshina vidihi. That is, my very walking is an act of circumambulation around you. Why? Because you are everywhere. How can I circumambulate a single spot alone and say you are there? What did Swami say? Vinayakudini, if you see Vinayaka only in the temple, he remains there. But if you recognize him as your Atmic presence, wherever you go, he is there. And what Adi Shankara told is, Sanchara Padayo Pradakshina Vidihi. Wherever I walk, I am circumambulating you. It's my pradakshina around you. Why? Because you are everywhere. Nidra Samadhi Stitihi. The verily the state of sleep that this body experiences is a worship or a resemblance to the state of samadhi that you are. Yad yad karomi tad akhilam. Whatever that happens through this frame, through this physical form, shambho tavaradhanam, he said, I do it in worship of you, O Lord Shiva. This was the verse composed centuries ago, and Swami reminded us on that day. He said, Vinayakudni atma rupam lo chuste, when you see Vinayaka as the Atmic Self, ekkada poina akkade unnaru. Wherever you go, he is there. His presence is always there. Right? Move from every body to every soul. Every soul to one soul. From one soul to God. In the final interaction that I would like to share, which defines this teaching of Swami in his own words, is another opportunity came, and between which there was a discourse of Swami, and in that discourse Swami said, if you keep merely saying I am God, nothing is going to happen to you. You know, just before that he had given me this instruction, right? That remind yourself, I am God, I am God. And then in a discourse in the following months, he says, some people keep telling, I am God, I am God. Nothing will happen to you. He said, first of all, there is illusion. Why? You're saying, I am God. That is, I and God are already separated. There is a veil in between, which is, I am God. So he said, don't tell Aham Brahmasmi, I am God. Just tell Aham, I. Not tell, Swami said, realize. Not tell, realize. There is just the presence, that is I, Aham. And he gave very simple example. He said, if I ask you what your name is, you will say, I am Ramappa. If you ask somebody else, you will say, I am Mary. Or if you ask somebody else, they will say, you know, I am Joseph. So everybody is telling, I am. Their names and forms may be different, isn't it? But everybody is saying, I am. Why? Because fundamentally they are I. Right? So Swami told this in a discourse. So that actually substantially confused me at that point of time as to what practice I should take up. So then I got another chance with Bhagwan very soon. So went back to him and asked, Swami, how to fight this ego, Swami? Means I want to know the current technique, because you gave me one technique and you yourself, you know, gave another perspective to it. So I understand that I have to progress from there. How we understand this is, we are in the primary school, we have to get to PhD. You cannot get from primary school to PhD without doing high school and university, right? So the teachings, the same set of teachings will change. Right? There's a very beautiful story which a master had, a very famous Vedantic teacher in India, Swami Chinmayananda, had narrated. He said, see, this is how you teach children. So, you know, a father was there who was a scientist, and he was busy reading a newspaper on a Sunday morning, and the child goes up to the father and says, Father, I want to know how it rains. Can you explain to me? You know, this child was in his primary education, like his kindergarten or whatever, right? So the father was a scientist, so he just, you know, brought his glass down and he started explaining the process of evaporation, condensation and all that. And then the kid was like, whoa, okay. So and he goes inside the kitchen and mother is making hot pakodas for him. And the kid, you know, tugs at the mother's sari, and mother says, Haan, beta, I'm making something for you. He says, no, I have a question. How does it rain? So mother said, see, there is a elephant, a black elephant, you know. Why? You see huge clouds which are dark in color. So elephants are black, right? So dark black elephants are there behind the clouds. And the elephant stretches its trunk into the ocean, draws water, and it goes around. See, the mother also tries to capitalize on the situation. So she says, it goes around looking for good children who behave nicely. So wherever the children behave nicely, it pours from its trunk, and that's what you see as rain. So the kid was overwhelmed. Wow, this is how it happens. And the kid goes back to the father, pulls down the newspaper and says, you don't know anything. Right? The same kid, when the kid comes to, say, a high school level, and he has the same question, how does it rain? And he goes to his mother, and mother tells this elephant story. He says, oh, mother, you're sweet. I will just take the pakodas from you, not the logic of rain. You know, and he goes back to his scientist father, and he's talking about the infrared rays and how the, you know, the land heats differently from the ocean, how it creates disparity of pressure, blah, blah, blah. So the child is enamored by the scientific explanation now, not by the explanation of the elephant, you know, drawing water and then showering where good children are, right? So this is exactly what Swami does. So in our primary level of, when we are in a primary stage of practice, Swami will give us certain level of practice. Then he himself will negate the practice. Why? Because if you don't clear your exam and proceed, how will you go on to higher classes? Swami doesn't want you to be settled in primary school. He wants you to complete PhD in flying colors and even go beyond that. Right? So that is why he said, if you keep chanting, I am God, nothing will happen. But he himself said at one point that you have to first remind yourself, right? So this time I wanted to know what is the next lesson plan for me, which we call as sadhana, right? So I said, Swami, how to fight ego? Swami said, where is ego? I said, Swami, in the mind. He said, remove the mind, it will go away. Because we understand clearly that the mind is a veil that separates us, isn't it? So he said, remove the mind, it will go away. Remove the veil, open the curtain, you can see clearly, right? Remove the mind, it will go away. He said, Swami, how to remove the mind? And Swami very compassionately says, you know, pointing to his own physical body, see, I am not this body. I am not this mind. Where is the place for I? I am not this body. I am not this mind. Where is the place for I? So I just asked, Swami, Swami, but what sadhana I need to do? Because I was naive. And Swami just replied in English and said, go and sit in your seat. You're not this body. You're not this mind. Go and sit in your seat. This presence that you are, that is not your body, that is not your mind, is the real presence of God beyond the veil. And that is not separate from you. Move from every body to every soul. And as you revel in this presence, in your own presence more and more, you recognize, move from every soul to one soul. There are no many atmas, there is just one. In experience, one soul to God. That one that you are is verily God itself. There's no separation between you and God. There is no veil that separates you, because you yourself are the presence beyond the veil.
Feeling the one in the smile of a child, seeing its love flowing gentle and mild, praising God in all that I do, knowing the truth that it's in me and you. Feeling the one always close at hand, grasping a thought that God is who I am, touching the hearts of everyone I see, looking inside, being home with me, catching a song that's coming from within, giving up life based on fear and sin, seeking to know that free, releasing it all and coming back to be. The crowd, revealing the light as he dispels the cloud. Embracing his love as it captivates my soul. Receiving the faith that I am now made whole. Laying my life at the feet of this one, no longer concerned with what I am. To live, I must be willing to die. See God in each other, in a friend and enemy, a brother. See God in all its wonders. See God.
We are the Atma,
and have always been.
We have no form and no name.
Name, form, lie.
In love and in true devotion, we're playing Maya's game, while singing God's sweet name.
Three faces has humanity. See them clear and you can be free from Maya's dream of ignorance. Free from Maya's dream of ignorance. Free from Maya's dream of ignorance. There is the one that you think you are, the one that others think you are, but then there is the one you really are. Then there is the one you really are. Then there is the one you really are. Presence and Christ, his loving Son, told him to be alike to all, for all are only one. Christ, my loving Son, all are only one.
your dying breath you fail to chant the holy Om, or God's sweet name. To chant the holy Om, or God's sweet name. To chant the holy Om, or God's sweet name. So start by walking in the light, then you'll see the lights inside. Soon you'll know that you are the light. Soon you'll know that you are the light. Soon you'll know that you are. Omnipresence and Christ, His loving Son, told Him to be alike to all, for all are only one. Christ, my loving Son, all are only one.
to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.